everybody. Welcome to episode 563 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is the new Comics on Wednesday episode for October 24th, 2018. I'll be talking about a few of the titles that are hitting stands today that you might be interested in. And I'm also going to do a rundown on some other titles that I think you might want to keep your eye out for. So without further ado, let's dive right in. The first book I'm going to talk about is Justice League Odyssey number 2. It's from writer Joshua Williamson. We have art and colors by Stefan Sejic and letters by Darren Bennett. So before I, well, actually, I'm not going to dive too deep into spoilers. So as we often do here on the podcast, we may talk about some books that come out today, but we want you to pick them up. We want you to read them for yourself, so we're not going to get too spoilery. But before I talk about the story in general, I just want to give some thoughts on kind of the series overall and the delay specifically, which I think has kind of robbed this title of some of its momentum, which I think is a real shame. You know, it was intended for the Justice League title from Scott Snyder, the Justice League Dark title from James Tynan, and the Justice League Odyssey title from Joshua Williamson to all launch in the same month, or pretty close to it. And there were some issues. They decided to do a bit of a change with the story for Justice League Odyssey. Stefan Sejic had to redraw basically two full issues, so you can understand why it was delayed a few months. So last week, we got Justice League number 10, and we also got Justice League Dark number 4, and we're only on the second issue of Justice League Odyssey. So I feel like because it got a late start, it doesn't have as much buzz. It doesn't have as many people talking about it. And it's a real shame because I think that had it launched at the same time as the others, that it wouldn't feel like it's trying to play catch up, right? That being said, the first two issues haven't really grabbed me yet. Now, keep in mind that for me, Justice League Dark didn't really become excellent until issue 3. Issue 3 was where all of a sudden everything clicked, and I felt like James Tynan was really like, okay, here's the setup in issue 1 and 2. Here's kind of the backstory, and then all of a sudden with issue 3, it's like, and now we tell the story, and now you're hooked. Now you've met the big bad. Now you know what I'm trying to do. And so it's entirely possible that with issue 3 of Justice League Odyssey, we could see the same sort of thing. But I'm just not quite feeling it yet. And I tell you, there's a lot to like here. But again, I just don't feel like it's as exciting as Justice League is and as Justice League Dark is. So as far as things to like, okay, I'm a huge Joshua Williamson fan, right? I mean, the guy loves comics, and he completely writes the kind of comic book stories, both in Flash and here in Justice League Odyssey. He writes the kind of stories that he would like to read. I mean, this guy is one of us. He's a huge comic book fanatic. He's a huge story nerd. And so he's writing the kind of stories in that we want to read. You know, he's doing cool things like, you know, Barry versus Wally in The Flash, and a Justice League team that has a super interesting lineup of Darkseid and Azrael and Cyborg and Jessica Cruz and Starfire. Those are all really great characters who have a lot of interesting little foibles and just interesting little aspects of their character on their own, right? And then when you put them together, I mean, come on. I mean, and then the fact that it's set in outer space, I mean, you wouldn't really think of Azrael, you know, sort of the bat, sort of Azrael, the avenging angel or whatever. You wouldn't think of him at all as a cosmic DC character, and yet here he is with Starfire and Jessica Cruz as teammates. So, and then Darkseid, what the heck's Darkseid doing on a Justice League team in a Justice League book? Like, super interesting. So, again, a lot to like here. And then when we talk about the artist on the series, Stefan Sijic, I mean, I feel like he's not as well known as he should be. He's done a ton of work for Top Cow. So I've known Stefan for a long time, known of his work, met him. I have original art from him and his wife, who's a great artist in her own right. But her name's Linda Sijic, by the way. But I feel like there's just not enough fans that know this guy's work, and it's, he works relatively quickly, as evidenced by the fact that, you know, although they wanted to change the story, it wasn't delayed as much as it could have been. But he does everything from, you know, the pencils, the inks, the colors, and his art just has it has a very smooth, polished feel to it. And it really suits kind of the cosmic story that he's trying to tell here. So, it's a different look for Darkseid, maybe a more svelte look if I had to really look at it, and it may suit this newer Darkseid, right? Cause the last time we saw Darkseid, he was a baby. That's even mentioned in this issue too. And so I'm sure there's a lot more to come on what exactly Darkseid's been up to and how he's gotten to the place that he is. And it also feels like after the first two issues that Cyborg is really kind of coming into his own as, a much more powerful character than we've seen before in the DCU. I mean, his, you know, Cyborg originally, his first origin didn't have anything to do with the Mother Box, right? And that was kind of something like Geoff Johns brought in, and, you know, it really dovetailed in with like the cinematic part of the DCU, and it gives Cyborg like a level up in terms of power, which kind of makes him suited more for the Justice League rather than the Titans, although I'm still not sure how I feel about that change. But he goes toe to toe in this issue with Darkseid, which is really cool. So again, I feel like I can't quite put my finger on what's missing for me in this series so far, because again, you're talking about one of my favorite writers, one of my favorite artists. So I should just be absolutely loving this book. And I'm not saying it's bad by any stretch. I just feel like there's a little ingredient missing so far, and I'm not sure what it is, but it's almost there, and I'm sure that Williamson and Sijic will get us there, and as soon as they do, everything will click and fall into place, and it'll be like, wow, this is one of the best books DC's putting out. You really should be reading it. So kudos to the creative team that's been involved for all their hard work, because again, having to throw out two full issues and start from scratch when it's so tied into other aspects of the DC universe, you know, Justice League Dark and Justice League, that's no small feat. And you wonder how much may or may not have gotten changed in those other titles that could have tied all three together a little bit more. So hopefully once Justice League Odyssey gets rolling, we will see some more crossovers, some more things kind of tie in, because we did see Cyborg early on in the Justice League title, but I can't remember if we've seen him recently, which would make sense since he's, you know, out here on this Justice League Odyssey team. So more to come. Obviously, I'm going to keep reading it. I'm really hoping, like I said earlier, that just like Justice League Dark, once Justice League Odyssey hits issue 3, that it really picks up steam. So I guess we'll see. All right, on to the next book I'm going to talk about today. It's Flash from writer Joshua Williamson. The art is by Scott Collins, and we've got letters by Steve Wands with colors by Luis Guerrero. So this is the final issue of the Faster Than Thought storyline. And it kind of continues the theme of Flash sort of being the book that explores a lot of the new forces, right? Like first we had the strength force that the trickster was possessed with, and now we're exploring the Sage Force, and it's another of the rogues, and it's Heatwave. He's been infected with the Sage Force, and it has a lot to do with empathy and emotion, and it really kind of suits the Flash really well right now, because if you've been reading the Flash, if you read Flash War, certainly if you read Heroes in Crisis, you know that there's been a lot of angst and a lot of emotional upheaval and turmoil and a lot of just unrest in Barry's life. And if you know anything about Barry Allen, he's not really that kind of guy, right? Like he gets accused of being boring at some time because of just how much he likes things to be kind of normal and predictable, and he wants to be in control. So in my mind, it's not that he's a boring character. It's just that he really likes things to be understood, and he likes everything, and you know, clearly a type A personality where he likes, you know, everything has a place and everything in its place. And so with all the upheaval and the turmoil that's been going on with his relationship with Wally and now these new forces, and Flash has been reluctant to leave Central City. He's been reluctant to really stretch himself because he's feeling vulnerable, right? He's feeling like he's been going through all these tough times recently, and it's making him kind of pull back into his shell, so to speak, and he wants to just play things safe, right? He's back with Iris. He wants that to work, and you know, he Wallace is missing or has gone off on his own. Wally's gone off on his own, and Barry's just feels like his whole world is unraveling. So it's only natural, it's only human that he would kind of withdraw. And what we find out in this this final issue of the exploration of the Sage Force in Faster Than Thought is that Barry comes to realize he can't play it safe, right? It's not who he is as a character, and he's been doing this subconsciously, and in this issue he kind of realizes what he's been doing. And again, it's interesting because it's such a contrast with what's going on with the Sage Force and what's going on with Heatwave, and why Heatwave has been such a great conduit and such a great character to be manipulated by the Sage Force because of the trauma in his own childhood, which once Barry sees that, it's kind of like looking in a mirror to some extent, right? Like he understands why the Force would infect Heatwave and why it's been so tough to defeat Heatwave, and why he's been so in sync with the Force and the Sage Force and been able to draw so much power from it. And once Barry makes that realization, then again, it's like looking in this distorted mirror. It's like two sides of the same coin, and he's able to make some decisions to move forward, and not on his own either, with Iris as well. So that's an important distinction. So I really feel like this is a turning point for Barry in the story that Joshua Williamson is taking him on. And I really feel like you can take from this issue, Flash 57, all the way back to the beginning of Flash War, and it's really one big story, right? And we just hit the climax, and now we're going to finally get the next part of the story. We're going to finally, like, to me, Barry has been stuck. Even though he's been, you know, having these adventures and you know, having all this stuff go on with Wally and with Trickster and with Heatwave, and he's been active, I don't feel like he's been moving forward. I don't really feel like he's been living his life. He's been kind of in a rut. And I think you take all those issues, and as I mentioned, as a whole, and read them, and you can kind of see how Barry has been stuck, how he's kind of made a trap for himself. He's been his own worst enemy in a way. And as I said, this issue is a big turning point. And going forward, we're going to see a big change in kind of in the status quo. And I'm really excited to see what Joshua Williamson is going to do with it. As far as the art for the issue, I mean, Scott Collins, he's a classic Flash artist. you know, he understands how to keep things free flowing and kinetic and how to give us such a sense of movement and speed. And I will particularly call out the title page, which has a really big splash on it. It's not quite a full splash page, but kudos to both Scott Collins and Luis Guerrero for doing an incredible job of showing this flaming maze that Heatwave has created. And I particularly point out the shadows that Flash is casting on the ground, which are really, really cool. I imagine that has to be Luis Guerrero, but man, does that look cool. So yeah, it's great. Joshua Williamson has been working with a lot of great artists on the Flash from the very beginning. And like I said, I can't wait to see where it goes from here. So thanks for that issue, Josh. It was really amazing. All right, let's move on to Titans number 28. It's written by writer Dan Abnett. We have art by Clayton Henry, colors by Marcelo Maiello, and letters by Dave Sharp. First of all, I'll just call out Marcelo Maiello. He's one of the best in the business. I'm pretty sure I've given him my best colorist in the Comic Source Awards before, and rightly so, very well deserved. And there's no lack in quality here for colors at all. And he really, this is what I love about Marcelo. He may be better than anybody else. Romulo Fajardo Jr. maybe is the one other colorist that jumps to mind that does this. He sets mood and tone with color just about better than anyone. And not only that, he tells a story with color, right? Like, as you read a story, you get transition from mood and tone based on what's happening in the panels, based on the art, and it can shift from, you know, page to page, panel to panel. And again, it has a lot to do with the scripting and the dialogue and the pace of the story. The art can sometimes give a lot of cues as to the mood and the tone on a particular page as the story is unfolding. Okay, so Marcelo Maiello does such a great job of altering that tone and mood with his color. His color shifts from page to page. It'll shift in a flashback. Just the overall tones that he's choosing, and it really helps to set the mood, and it helps with the visual transitions and just the overall evolution of the story. And it's he's just exceptional. It's really quite something. And it's something that if you haven't been reading comics for a really long time, or you're not paying attention, you can really miss. And then it's only after you're done reading, you're thinking, man, that was a really good comic. Like, it flowed so well. You know, the peaks and valleys of this one particular issue, they just worked together so well. And you don't realize how much of that is the color, especially in the backgrounds, until you go back and you're specifically looking for it. And you can see the little tricks that Marcelo uses to kind of guide you through the story emotionally, right, with the story beats. So just an incredible job by him. Clayton Henry, I mean, I love his art. It's very emotive. He does a great job with faces, very clean lines. And I've always been a fan ever since I first saw his work over at Valiant, actually. I think previously he had worked at Marvel, was the first work he did. But I wasn't familiar with his work at Marvel. I knew him from Valiant. So he's a really great artist and does an exceptional job here. Again, really good transitions. He's great at drawing action shots, especially when some of these action scenes have many, many, many combatants, and Clayton handles it all superbly. So kudos to him. As far as the writer, Dan Abnett, every time I read something by Dan Abnett, particularly the Titans or his Aquaman series, I'm like, why am I not caught up on this? It's so good. I really should be caught up on this. And I felt the same way about this issue of Titans. Like, You know, he's been writing Titans since the beginning of DC Rebirth. It was exceptional in the beginning, and I don't know why I ever fell off. I mean, the obvious question is there's just, you know, there's too many good comics and not enough hours in the day to read all those good comics. But I really need to make time to get caught up on Titans because it's really exceptional. And this particular issue is the prelude to Drowned Earth. But I find that kind of strange, right? Because it's like Justice League 10, I can't remember what they called it. Maybe the preview to Drowned Earth. Drowned Earth really started here. But we find out the motivations, really, in Justice League 10. We find out really the beginnings of Drowned Earth. And when this issue starts, the Earth is already drowned, so to speak. But that's not to say that it's not exciting. It's not to say that this issue is not going to tie in to the Justice League Aquaman Drowned Earth special that comes out on Halloween that really kicks off the story proper. But it's great to see the dynamic, and I feel like Abnett really has such a great feel for these characters. Now, I'm going to say this with kind of a disclaimer. I haven't read the Geoff Johns run of Teen Titans or Titans, right? So keep that in mind when I say this. But for me, of the Titans runs that I've read, I don't think anybody writes the Titans as well as Dan Abnett, with the exception of Marv Wolfman. You know, the Marv Wolfman, George Perez run of Titans is one of the greatest runs of comics of all time. So I'm going to give that its proper due. But if when it comes to Titans, you know, other than those two guys that basically created the modern Titans and the modern characters, for me, it's Dan Abnett. Like, he gets these characters, and I feel like he gets them better than just about anybody else that I've ever read on Titans. He just understands the balance between making them seem like adult, competent, seasoned heroes, but still the sidekicks that they originally started out as, if that makes any sense. He walks that line and balances so well that, for me, Dan Abnett on the Titans, that's where it's at. So, and I'm really excited about the Drowned Earth storyline. Just a quick reminder that Scott Snyder was on the podcast last week to talk about Drowned Earth. So if you want more details, definitely go back and check out that Scott Snyder episode. He gives a lot of really cool information. There's a lot to dig through there. So, all right, moving on to the next title I'm going to talk about. It's Wonder Woman, number 57, The Witching Hour, Part 4. It's written by James Tynan. We have pencils by Emanuela Lupacchino, with inks by Ray McCarthy, colors by Romulo Fajardo Jr., and it doesn't have anyone listed for letters, which I found very strange, but I think Dave Sharp did the letters on this, and I think where maybe it fell down was the next person after Romulo Fajardo Jr. in the credits is David Yarden, who did the cover. So I'm thinking that somebody started typing like Dave Sharp and then like glanced back at their paper and said, oh yeah, I was typing Dave Yarden, and Yarden got the credit for the cover and somehow Dave Sharp got left out. Now, it could be wrong. Maybe it's not Dave Sharp on letters, but it's so strange that there's no letter credited. So if it was somebody besides Dave Sharp, my apologies. I don't mean to shortchange anyone, because the lettering is done extremely well in this issue. So whoever it is, and I think it's Dave Sharp, kudos for a great job done. Now, I already mentioned how incredible the Witching Hour story has been from James Tynan. I think it's a 6-issue with 2 bookends. So this is part 4. So I think there's only 2 parts to come and then the final issue. So 3 total. So we really should have seen the climax, or maybe next issue we're going to see the climax. This one definitely ends on a cliffhanger, which I wasn't expecting. And I wonder what it really means for Wonder Woman. And actually, as I look at it, I'm looking at the last page here. It says to be concluded next week in Justice League Dark and Wonder Woman, The Witching Hour, number 1. So I guess there's only one. I guess it's only a 6-part or 5-part. I'm not sure that sounds right to me. So anyway, it's one or two more parts that are coming. It's been a lot of fun. It's been James Tynan basically standing the magical corner of the DC Universe on its head. And even though James had introduced some really intriguing and creepy and scary villains in the first couple issues, then he totally changed gears, right? Like, we met the Upside Down Man and that battle sort of ended. It wasn't won by one side or the other, but we did get a chance to meet him. And he was just as suitably creepy and scary as James had warned me that he was going to be. But then that transitioned into this Witching Hour story, which has been fascinating in its own right because it's dealing with Wonder Woman's history with magic and us trying to understand just how she has become so mystical and so magical in nature. The creative team on Justice League as well as Justice League Dark are really leaning into that. And so not only have we been exploring that, but we've been exploring how broken magic in the DC Universe is, which again ties back to this idea that there's a malevolent entity of which the Upside Down Man may be the leader of or the advisor to, or perhaps he serves some power even greater than himself. So that's that menace, that threat is still there hanging in the background. But in the meantime, we've got something a little more pressing for Justice League Dark and for Wonder Woman that, again, is somebody trying to take advantage of this change in the way the magic corner of the DC Universe works. And so it's a very eclectic team. Kudos to James Tynan for going from Detective Comics, which was a huge ensemble cast, to now Justice League Dark with another big ensemble cast. I can imagine James wanting to write a solo book that's focused on one character after this, right? So he has a little bit easier time, and he's not trying to juggle screen time for all these various characters in his book. So it is a very fun book. It's very exciting. It's been, since Witching Hour started, kind of one crazy story beat and one crazy twist and turn after another. So I'm very excited that it's concluding on Halloween, and I'm not going to have to wait more than a week to kind of get the answers to my questions and understand what's going on. But yeah, I feel like this is the best thing James has ever written. And that's saying something, because his detective run is an instant classic for me. But you can tell that he has such a personal connection to these Justice League Dark characters. He really understands who they are, whether we're talking about Deadman or Constantine or Zatanna. I really feel like he's speaking through them in such an authentic way. It's great to see, and you can clearly tell he's a fan of these characters. So, great job, James. And, one thing I'll say about the art by Emanuela, I mentioned the last time we talked about the previous issue of Wonder Woman, which I think might have been part two of The Witching Hour, that I felt like the art didn't look like her art usually looks. It didn't look as clean or as polished as her art usually looks, and I had wondered if it was the inks of Ray McCarthy. It clearly isn't, so I don't know if she was just behind, if she's on deadline, if she rests things, if she's trying things different, but she's got Ray McCarthy on inks over her pencils again this issue, and the art is gorgeous. Like, I don't know, it's really strange that the last issue looked so much just kind of discombobulated. It just didn't look settled or clean or as polished as I'm used to seeing Emanuela's art look. So like I said, I don't know what kind of issue there might have been with inks or whatever, but it's the same creative team here as far as art goes. We have Emanuela on pencils. We have Ray McCarthy on inks. We have Romulo Ferrara Jr. on colors. All three do an excellent job, and it's a gorgeous book to look at. It really, really is. All right, up next, the last book I'm going to talk about in detail. It's Shadow Man number 8 from writer Andy Diggle, art by Renato Guedes, letters by Simon Boland. And I got a chance to sit down with Andy at New York Comic Con and talk a little Shadow Man. I hope you guys all got a chance to listen to that because Andy actually, I don't want to say inadvertently, but he gave a lot of clues of what to expect, right? Like things that we had speculated on the podcast before about why would Baron Samedi help out Jack Boniface? It doesn't make any sense, but maybe there's something more to it. And so, like I said, Andy was talking about that on the podcast and he's really leaning into it here. Alisa and Jack actually had that conversation, this issue about, well, why would Baron Samedi want to help you? And so Shadow Man, I know it's had its problems in the past. It's had some Valiant fans who haven't understood it or wanted to support it or just didn't think it was very good. And, you know, I've said before, in particular reference to this series that Shadow Man is, this is the Shadow Man series that always should have been. This is the Shadow Man that fans have been waiting for and have always wanted. And Andy has done such a great job of giving us a different side of Jack, but a side that makes complete sense based on what we've seen so far. And it's really, I mean, we see it in the first few pages of this issue where even Alisa mentioned it. She's like, I got to say, I like the new Jack Boniface. I mean, the old one was cute, but this new guy, super chill. And that's what's been missing. Like, I couldn't have put my finger on it before, right? Like, being such a huge fan of the first iteration of Shadow Man, the first go-round, and then what was missing, what didn't work with this new version of Shadow Man. And that's what it was. He was missing that sense of style, that sense of cool, that sense of super chill. Like no matter how things got, Jack had that faith and belief in himself and he didn't go like flipping out. Whereas this Jack has been motivated by anger and has been through so much chaos and turmoil. He's never felt settled. He's never felt, like Alicia calls him here, super chill. So this issue certainly starts a new arc, and it's an arc that's going to be pretty tough, right? Like it's going to be a lot of brutality based on what we saw in this issue from the forces that Jack is aligned against. And it's going to be somewhat of a mystery too. Like Jack and Alicia both know that Baron Samedi didn't do it out of the goodness of his heart. Didn't send Jack back through time to give him a better understanding of what the Loa is without expecting something in return. So really looking forward to seeing just what price Jack is going to have to pay to Baron Samedi for this, or what payment Samedi's going to expect for this kind of newfound peace and tranquility and balance that Jack has found. It's really great to see. And as far as art goes, I mean, it's Renato Guedes, so you know it's quality. It's a little sketchy. It's a little painterly, if that's a word. It's not quite the tight lines and storytelling that I normally go for, but it's not to say that it's not done expertly well, because it really is. And I also feel like Andy Diggle is really coming to his own with these characters and this corner of the Valiant universe. He's I hope the Valiant gets to hang on to him for a really, really long time. Like, I want to see Andy's take on Ninjak. I want to see Andy's take on Exo Manowar. I especially want to see Andy's take on the Harbinger Kids and Pete Stanchek in particular. I feel like Andy's has the right sensibility as a writer and as a storyteller to live in the Valiant universe for a really, really long time. And I'm hopefully going to see a lot of those Valiant guys at LA Comic Con this weekend. And you can bet your bottom dollar I'm going to have that conversation with them. Like, you guys need to lock Andy Diggle up with an exclusive contract, or do whatever you do to make sure that guy stays with Valiant for a really long time and get him working on as much stuff as possible. Because, again, I just feel like his sensibility and his storytelling style are perfectly suited for the Valiant universe. So, all right, time for Book of the Week. So this is interesting. It's something I've never done before on the podcast. And, namely, my book of the week is a book that I'm not actually going to talk about on this episode. You know, since Brian Michael Bendis has taken over the Superman books, we've been doing Superman Sundays. And so I'm going to save the book of the week, Action Comics number 1004, for when we cover it on Superman Sunday. So be sure you tune in for that. And it's not quite my book of the week in the way that most other books are. Like, I would say you absolutely have to pick it up. I do think you need to pick it up, but I don't know. I'm still on the fence as to whether I like what Brian Michael Bendis is doing. And in this Action Comics 1004, we finally get the answers to the whole why didn't Lois tell Clark she was back on Earth kind of thing, and that whole story that's been going on. And it really engendered a lot of thinking. Like, there's a lot to think about there and a lot to unpack as far as Lois's reasoning and her relationship with Clark, to the point where my wife, whose name is Lois, I even got her to read a comic, and she does not like comics. She does not read comics, but I even got her to check it out and read it so that her and I could talk about their relationship, Clark and Lois's relationship, especially in contrast to our own marriage, right? So that was really cool. And just based on the fact that a comic can do that, right? It can be something that engenders all this conversation and examination of things in our own life. I had to give it my book of the week, even though, like I said, I'm not sure I like what Bendis is doing here. The jury's still out, and I'm still in the wait and see. I probably need to talk to Brian himself and kind of understand, have a little more time pass since it hasn't even been a week since I read it. And I've read it like three times now. So as time goes on, often, I reread things, I start to gain a different perspective. So, and plus probably talking to Adam from Talking Superman will give me some insight as well. But yeah, it's an important book. And especially based on the seeds that Bendis is sowing, it could have a lot of ramifications for both Bendis's run going forward, as well as Lois and Clark's relationship going forward. And I was worried. I did talk about that on a past Superman Sunday, the one I did of the Sunday of New York Comic Con, because Bendis mentioned in the Superman Anniversary panel that events that were going to happen in the Superman book were going to fundamentally change the relationship of Lois and Clark going forward, possibly forever. And I was really worried because I was like, man, they already have a great relationship. I can't imagine he's talking about improving that relationship, because that's not how you tell story, right? Like, in the heart of story is conflict and drama. Like, that's what makes interesting story. So you've got to create that. And, having Lois and Clark's marriage stay the same without any friction or issues or problems, where are you finding the story to tell there, right? So when he said that, I was worried. And based on what I saw in Action Comics 1004, it seems like those concerns and that worry was well-founded. But again, I'm reserving judgment. I'm certainly not going to bash anybody. It engendered conversation and engendered a lot of thought and examination. And so I appreciate that as a comic reader. It gives even more value to the book. But whether or not I like where it's actually going is another question altogether. So, but it's my book of the week, and I do encourage you to pick it up. So some of the other titles out today, I talked about these books on our Aftershock Monday. From Aftershock, there's three titles. We have Baby Teeth number 13, we have Beyonders number 3, and Dead Kings number 1. Over at DC, in addition to the books that I already mentioned, we have Batgirl number 28, which has an incredible variant cover by Joshua Middleton. You definitely want to pick that up. We also have Books of Magic number 1. That's continuing the launch of these four new titles set in the Sandman universe that are being curated by Neil Gaiman. We have Detective Comics number 991. I believe that wraps up James Robinson's quick little arc on the story. We also have the first issue of Old Lady Harley from Frank Thierry. We have issue 3 of Scarlet. We talked about Titans and Wonder Woman. And we also have The Terrifics number 9 from Jeff Lemire. All right, over at Image, not a whole lot, kind of a light week from Image this week, but I did want to point out that Die, number 4 from Robert Kirkman and Chris Burnham is out this week. And I do want to talk about Die on the podcast. So I've read the first issue, 3 issues. They're pretty solid. It's kind of tough to talk about Die. I would actually like to talk about it on New Comics Wednesdays when it hits the stands, but we don't get advanced copies of certain books from Robert Kirkman. So that's just a personal choice on his part, which I totally respect. So we'll have to do kind of an early week, kind of like we do Marvel Mondays. We'll have to do that, one of those, like for Die. All right, moving on to Marvel, we have the next issue of Amazing Spider-Man, which is number 8. We have a Black Panther versus a Deadpool miniseries kicking off with issue number 1 of 5. On the Infinity Wars front, with the mashups of heroes, we've got Infinity Wars Arachnite, issue number 1 of 2. That's a Spider-Man Moon Knight mashup. We also have, speaking of Moon Knight, the 200th issue of Moon Knight, written by Max Bemis. Looking forward to that. We also have the next issue of Return of Wolverine, which is issue number 2, written by Charles Soule, with art by Declan Shalvey. We've got a bunch of Spider-Geddon stuff. We have Spider-Geddon number 2. We have Spider-Girls number 1 of 3. And then we also have Spider-Gwen Ghost Spider number 1. Also, the latest issue of the X-Men Black one-shots is hitting stands this week with X-Men Juggernaut number 1. And then the last thing I'll mention from Valiant, already talked about Shadow Man hitting the stands. We also have Exo Man of War number 20 from writer Matt Kent. So those are just a few of the titles you should probably be on the lookout for if you head down to your local comic book shop today. Hope there's something that really interests you. And as always, if there's something I'm missing out on, please, please, please reach out to me and let me know. I know there's tons of good comics out there, and it's hard to find time to read them all. But if something's great and I'm missing it, I want to know about it. Hopefully I'll find time to check it out and give you my thoughts. So, once again, I want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All 3 spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Don't forget, I will be at Los Angeles Comic-Con this Saturday, October 27th. I'll be on the Superman 80th Anniversary panel at noon on Saturday, room 304, I believe it is. So look forward to seeing any listeners that are going to be out there. If you are going to be there, please, please, please let me know. I always love to hand out Comic Source lanyards and listen to fans talk about what they love about the show. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.